Hey everyone, welcome back to Peeling Back Money and Life. My name is Casey and I'm joined by my co-host Mike. And today we're going to dive into a topic that's often on everyone's mind, working with a financial planner, or also known as a financial advisor.
Absolutely, Casey. It's a decision that can shape your financial future. And we're going to start with a question that many grapple with, whether they have worked with a financial advisor before, if they currently are working one, or if they're considering it. And this episode will surely be of some value to you.
Yes, we're going to talk about kind of the basics a little bit first. A financial planner and a financial advisor, they're both professionals. They both provide guidance and advice on managing someone's personal finances. While the terms are often used interchangeably, there are some subtle differences between the two. And this is what kind of the industry jargon a little bit. So financial planner, think of it as a professional who helps individuals or families create that comprehensive plan. The word comprehensive there is key. So they're going to consider all various aspects of a person's financial situation, whether that's budgeting, investments, retirement planning, tax planning, not tax filing or preparing, tax planning, estate planning, risk management. Financial planners, they're going to take a holistic approach and they're going to aim to provide a long-term strategy to help clients achieve the financial goals. While on the other hand, a financial advisor is going to have more of a broader term that encompasses, different areas of financial advice. This may include financial planners, may include investment advisors, wealth managers, other professionals that we're going to kind of get into. And they may specialize in different areas like investment management or maybe retirement planning, but they may have more focused on areas that they're going to focus specifically on for a person's situation instead of that comprehensive nature. So in summary, while the terms financial planner and financial advisor are often used interchangeably, a financial planner typically takes a more comprehensive approach to create a long-term financial plan for the individual, for the family, for the couple, while the financial advisor may specialize in specific areas of financial advice. Mike, over to you.
Yeah, I just want to cover, when you look at financial advisors, there really is an alphabet soup of designations that are out there. The big ones are the CFP, the Certified Financial Planner. A lot of times you'll see a Chartered Financial Analyst. You might see that as a CFA or a Chartered Financial Consultant, a CHFC. And then, another one that's pretty common out there is a CIMA, which stands for Certified Investment Management Analyst. And they're more, focused on investments. And then the list goes on and on, right? There's CPWA and AAMA, AAMS and RICP. And it just kind of goes on and on and on. There's a whole bunch of them. Like I said, the common ones are the CFP, the CFA, and then the CHFC. And so the other thing that you're probably not going to see listed as a designation after somebody's name is what's called a Series 65. And what this is it's the Uniform Investment Advisor Law Exam. And so anybody that's going to manage investments has to take this, but they may not necessarily. You really can't put that after your name. The rules don't allow for that. Plus, there's tons more. Again, as I mentioned, the gold standard in financial planning industry is really the CFP, the Certified Financial Planner designation. And that designation is globally recognized by thousands and thousands of people. And it signifies that the planner has met a certain set of criteria, a rigorous education. They've went through an exam. They have the experience. A CFP has to have 3 years of experience. They have to take ethics classes every year. And so CFP professionals are trained to provide a comprehensive and an all-encompassing, look at financial planning services. And they adhere to a code of ethics, and professional standards as part of what they do. And so, again, while the list above, it mainly pertains to financial planning and investment management, it outlines various credentials and designations related to those areas. However, it's really important to note that in the world of life insurance, there's just as many designations. So as you're going out and you're starting to search for a planner, be aware whether they're an insurance agent or a financial planner, because it just gets really, really confusing. So, and we'll put a list of these designations in the show notes as well for you. So when considering, financial planning and investment management, it's really crucial to be aware of what the different designations and qualifications relevant to what you're looking for, and as well as maybe being familiar with life insurance designations.
Absolutely. Now, when to consider a financial planner advisor, or for some people who like to do it themselves. So there's several factors here to consider. If your finances are relatively simple, or you have the time, you have the expertise, you have the desire to manage them on your own, you may choose to do it yourself. And that may change over time, as your professional or personal obligations change, or your health or life changes. However, if you have a complex financial situation where and specific financial goals, and or you lack the time or the expertise, or you prefer an objective viewpoint because you see yourself as not as objective as you would like to be, working with a financial planner can provide that valuable guidance and help ensure your financial affairs are properly managed. So, first, let's get a little bit more into complexity of the financial situation. If your finances are simply, you're more likely to handle them on your own, just like you're more likely to do your own taxes, through TurboTax, for example. However, the more complex your situation gets, the more apt you might be to look elsewhere to help somebody, help your situation out. So whether you have multiple income sources, do you have investments in various different places, and are you factoring in taxes? Not just preparing your taxes, but proper tax planning, as we kind of alluded to before when talking about a proper comprehensive financial plan that a financial planner does. And off to the second point here of time and expertise. It does require some time, especially up front to create that plan, but then over time to make sure it stays up to date and make sure that if you have a significant other, that it's up to par with them. If you're starting to have kids come into the picture, that you take all those things into account. And third here, specific financial goals. So if you have goals, you're saving for retirement, you might be buying a home, maybe you're starting a business, a financial planner can really help create a tailored plan to achieve those goals for you. And they can work in collaboration with you. They can hold you accountable to those goals where maybe you're falling a little bit short of your hopes, your expectations. Maybe a financial planner can kind of push you over that edge a little bit. Number four is a big one here, emotions and biases, especially when it comes to investments. We often make some emotional decisions, whether now if it's a click of a button, that we can kind of derail our whole financial situation in just one click. So a financial planner can really provide that objective viewpoint in helping you think through those emotionally charged decisions in a more rational way, based on your financial situation and goals. And then fifth here, the expertise of a financial planner. We talked about the gold standard of a CFP, a certified financial planner, and all the training, upfront to get that designation, but then the ongoing continuing education that is involved with that to making sure that they're staying up with code changes, law changes, but also, how best to work with people. So what is your financial planner? What books are they reading? What workshops are they going to? What continuing education classes are they doing? To helping you optimize your financial life. So again, remember, it's a personal decision that may change and evolve over time. You may kind of go back and forth, but it's important to evaluate your own circumstances and goals and what choice is right for you at this point in your life. Mike, do you have anything further to add or highlight, or do we want to move on to understanding the services that are provided?
Yeah, sure. Actually, so, when making that decision to either do it yourself or seek help, ask yourself the following questions. Do you have all the knowledge needed to develop that good investment plan, to integrate it into your overall estate plan, knowing the tax and how to integrate that into your plan, and risk management, insurance and all types of aspects of risk? Can you do that into your plan? Can you build that into your plan? And then, can you do the ongoing planning that goes with them as we move through life, and inevitably there's going to be changes, and do you have that knowledge to be able to do that? So that's really the first question that you want to ask. The second question, do I have a strong knowledge of financial history, so that I don't make bad mistakes and in it for the long haul? Education could, that includes information on bear markets or bull markets, and knowing, you know, what the history of the market has done. And the more that you build that knowledge base, the more you're going to be comfortable doing this yourself. And if you don't have it, that's okay. I mean, that's why we have advisors in the industry, right? And so, and then third, you know, in either case, really, do I have the emotional stability to withstand my plan, you know, in good times? In good times, it's easy. But when the bad times come around, do you have that emotional stability to continue with the plan that you set up, or, you know, the plan that the advisor sets up for you? In either case, we need to look at that. That's an important aspect of, you know, figuring out if you're going to do this or not on your own. And then, you know, we move on now to services provided. And let's talk about, you know, what it is that these professionals provide to the clients. You know, it's not just about managing the investments. You know, good comprehensive financial planners, they offer a wide range of services, and it's crucial to make sure that you know what you are going to be receiving. You know, when you go in and you're interviewing these advisors, you know, you want to ask, what is it that I'm going to be getting from you? And we'll talk about, as you're interviewing these advisors in a little bit, we'll give you some questions that you can ask and gain more clarity around what it is that you're going to get for the money that you're paying to them. And so with that being said, you know, financial planners could offer a range of services to help individuals and families manage their personal finances. Some of the services provided by the planners include, you know, creating that whole comprehensive financial plan. And that includes the investment management, retirement planning, tax planning, real estate plan, or estate planning, risk management, and insurance. Maybe you've got a kid that's going to college or a grandchild going to college, so it'd be education planning. And maybe you're one that struggles with cash flow, and so it would be budgeting and cash flow management. And then the really good financial planners, they have a heart of a teacher. And so financial education and guidance is something that the really good planners offer to their clients. And so it's important to take note, you know, about all these different services that I just listed, because they're going to vary. And they're going to vary based on the expertise of the advisor, the qualifications, and really the needs of the clients that they serve. So a question that you're going to want to ask yourself prior to finding that, you know, going out and searching for an advisor is, what is the ideal relationship that you're going to have with that person or with that firm? Are you going to work one-on-one with that advisor, or you work with a team of advisors? But what is it that you are going to get, and what do you want out of that relationship? And then, you know, once you've decided to work with someone or a firm, you know, how do you go about finding, you know, that right fit? Because you get into some pretty deep stuff in financial planning, and you want to have a good relationship. And so what you should be looking for is really the topic of our next discussion here. Casey?
Absolutely, Mike. That's a key question. How do they go about finding that right fit? You know, we're going to discuss here the qualities to look for, what questions specifically ask, and kind of what answers maybe you can look for, and how to ensure your advisor aligns with your financial goals and values. So, you know, think similar to your doctor, for example. One of the most important items when interviewing a professional is that you trust them. You can see a long-term professional relationship. You don't want somebody where you're going to, you know, bounce around every year, for example. If it doesn't feel right, then move on to the next person. That's nothing against that person. They may be a great person. They may be a great financial planner, but maybe they're just not right for you. So, and even if they have the gold standard, for example, that CFP certification that we keep coming back to, you still need to trust them, and you still need to see a long-term relationship with them. This isn't or shouldn't be a decision that you don't spend some quality time on. You want to make sure you do. You want to make sure you do the research on the front end, just like you would if you're buying a home or buying a car. And any planner that pressures you into moving forward, that should be a red flag to you. And you know, and ideally you should seek a fee-only financial planner that we've talked about in previous episodes that doesn't sell any products. They don't get any referral fees. They don't receive any commissions. They're only paid by you, the client. And find someone who listens to you and truly wants to understand your unique situation and help you live your desired lifestyle is what it's all about. This may mean that you meet with multiple advisors, planners, to find out one that you connect with and that they'll listen to you. Someone who wants to know what you value about money and or what you see its purpose for, rather than, you know, I just want to talk about your money. They want to get to know you. You know, a good one can help organize your financial life. They can help clarify and prioritize those goals. As I mentioned before, help hold you accountable, you know, to determine if your current course of action or actions are going to help you reach your goals and provide recommendations that are needed to help close that gap. You know, they're going to create with you and help you implement that plan that makes sense to you in your unique situation. They're going to provide that ongoing support when life changes, you know, whether that's getting married, growing a family, buying a home, retiring, other health challenges that may come up. The advisor does a true holistic, comprehensive job, incorporating all those areas that we've talked about and not just focusing on your investments. So, you know, for example, we tell our clients money is just a tool to be used to achieve your needs and goals. While important, true planning starts with goals and understanding what your desired lifestyle is. So there also are working with the other professionals you may have in your life, you know, whether that's an accountant, an estate planner, your insurance people. If you don't have these professionals already, a good financial planner will help you find these professionals if you need them, recommend some options that you can look into. And ultimately, a financial planner, you know, they're going to cost money, but they can be worth thousands and thousands of dollars, just like an accountant can be worth their money in weight in gold, and provide a multiple in terms of value from what they're charging. You know, and the opposite can also be true. And hopefully, you know, this episode and previous episodes that we've done can help you find a good one that is what you need and or want. So by doing a proper pre-interview and an interview, you're going to increase your likelihood you have found the best possible person for you and your family. And that's what we'll be focusing on now, is guiding you through what to consider in a pre-interview and then actually meeting with that individual or team.
All good stuff, Casey. And I just want to add one thing here. And that's, you know, where do I find a fee-only advisor? And so please note, you know, in the show notes, we'll provide a list of resources where you can go to find that. And note that the financial service industry has exponentially more fee-based advisors than fee-only advisors. And we'll talk about that difference in just a moment. So the number of fee-only advisors is growing. But it may be possible that there are no advisors in your local area who are fee-only, and that may mean you may need to work virtually with a fee-only advisor if you choose to do so. So, and many fee-only advisors do work virtually, and it would be a great way to work. And so, you know, through the whole COVID thing, you know, we got more comfortable with working virtually. So it's a great way to work with someone. So, you know, kind of moving on to, you know, looking at that pre-interview, you know, and what do you want to do when looking for an advisor? So do research online, you know, look at, go to the social media profile, the Facebook, the Instagram, the Twitter, you know, of the advisor that you're looking at. And that'll give you a little bit of insight to, you know, what maybe they offer. Does that advisor that you're looking at, do they do podcasts? Do they have blogs and things like that? You can see, you know, is that the information that you're looking to get? Do they provide that through those channels? You know, and you can also see if maybe the way that they talk and is that going to be a good fit for you? You can search for these individuals professionally as well, you know, instead of using the social media. So, you know, like FINRA and the SEC are both regulatory firms for the investment management world, and you could go to these places and look for advisors. A common place is BrokerCheck. If you just go to BrokerCheck.com, you plug in the individual's name and what city they're in, and it'll pop up. And you know, again, it's a website that's it's provided by FINRA, which actually FINRA stands for Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. And so that allows you to do some research and verify the background and credentials of the individuals or firms that you're looking at maybe working with. And so it provides information about, you know, their registration, you know, who they've been investment advisors for, and just other finance, you know, information on them. And you can access details such as, you know, what's their employment history been? What's their qualifications? What certifications do they have? You know, do they have any of that alphabet soup that we talked about earlier? It'll show, you know, in BrokerCheck. What licenses do they have? You know, when we get into insurance, you know, insurance agents are licensed, and it'll show you what licenses they have. And then again, any disciplinary actions or complaint filings against those individuals or firms. You know, we're in our industry, we're required to put complaints and, you know, disciplinary actions into this system so that clients can see what has happened. So it's really a useful tool for investors to make really informed decisions about choosing, you know, a financial professional to work with. And so, again, just to go back, I did didn't cover, SEC stands for, you know, Securities Exchange Commission. It's just another federal agency that's responsible for protecting you, the investor, and maintaining fair and efficient markets out in the world. And so, and they facilitate, you know, regulations and rules that we have to follow, and they oversee and regulate the securities industry, and that includes the stock exchange, you know, the NASDAQ and all of that. They regulate brokerage firms, investment advisors, and it's so it's really just a primary goal to ensure that investors have access to accurate and complete information and make those in you know informed investment decisions. So make use of that broker check. So, Casey, as we're kind of moving on here, now that we've kind of done some of that pre-interview, you know, thoughts that, that our listeners should be having when looking at an advisor, what are some questions and what are we hoping to get out of an interview with a potential financial planner?
Absolutely. Yeah, we want to make sure that a financial planner and their, you know, their team is focused on you. They're, you know, they're not focused solely on your money. They're going to have, a good one's going to have a process that they're going to follow, but they're going to give you an opportunity to ask some questions. You know, they shouldn't be pressuring you to do anything, focus on education so you can understand what is going on. So some questions here, you know, first one, what is your education experience? You know, and here you're kind of looking for, you should check out and the professional advisor's professional designation before you hire them. You know, we've mentioned some of those resources. So see what their designations and experience and education is. And even going a deep further is if they don't say anything directly, what are they currently reading? What are they currently doing for continuing education? Number two, what do you do and don't do for your clients? So here there's kind of two approaches, you know, see what they cover compared to what your needs are, or show them your needs and see what they cover. A good one is not going to necessarily be an expert at everything. That's why they're going to work with other professionals, as we talked about before, whether it's an accountant, estate planner, insurance people. Number three here is, what are your strengths and weaknesses in regards to the financial planning area? So kind of going right off of that second question. So more than likely here, they're not going to be, again, experts in every area. They won't list other people. So here you're looking for them to be humble and honest. Number four, how do you envision this relationship working both in the short and long term? You need this to be a mutually beneficial relationship that has trust on both sides. So they should explain kind of the onboarding process and how they also serve you going forward, describe when and how often you will meet, what they will deliver for you, and what they can expect from you. Question number five, how often will we meet and what will I receive from you? So depending on what is answered in that previous question, and also to a degree, maybe the more you pay, are you going to be meeting face-to-face? Are you going to be meeting virtually? How do you go about contacting them? You know, and does that fit with how you want to have a relationship? Number six, what is the appropriate risk level I should take with my investment portfolio? So the risk should be aligned with your goals and objectives. You know, what is the money going to be used for and by when? You know, for example, just because someone is older in retirement doesn't mean they will have 50% bonds, because maybe a good portion of the portfolio is for their heirs or a cause they believe in. So the time horizon actually is beyond their life expectancy. Question number seven, what kind of returns can I expect? The actual number here is not really as important as what explanation they provide. No one should be promising you a high number. You know, the explanation could be around what long-term returns have shown in the past. Question number eight, may I see your sample portfolio of a couple clients, you know, one from about 5 years ago and one from the same client from the most recent? The point of this question really is to see how similar the two portfolios are, you know, over the course of those 5 years. They should be pretty similar, not necessarily identical, but if they're very different, then there's probably a lot of buying and selling, which is generally not going to be in your favor. Number nine, may I see your personal portfolio? They may or may not be comfortable with this, but if they are, it should look, again, very similar to the portfolio that they showed you in the previous question, because they should be investing in similar assets and funds in their personal portfolio as they're recommending for you. And if they're not, you know, why is that? That doesn't mean they need to show you how much they have balance-wise. but, you know, are they invested in the same kind of funds? You know, if they're recommending active management for you, but they're invested in index passive funds, then that's kind of red flag. You know, and that goes right off to the next question. What's your investment philosophy? Here, you're trying to get a glimpse into their knowledge on investing. And you can also ask, what do they think about market timing in an index versus an active portfolio? If they didn't say anything yet in their explanations. Number 10 here, have you had any disciplinary action from regulatory authorities? So Mike mentioned before about looking them up on FINRA, the SEC website. You know, you can do that in the pre-interview phase, but see what their response here is if you found anything in your pre-research. Number 11, will you act as a fiduciary? Will they always put your needs ahead of theirs? That's what this question is getting at. This refers to whether they are advisors legally obligated to put your financial interests first, or if it's a, you know, clarify basically, do they do this all the time, or is it just only some of the time? You know, ask that question to get more clarification around that. Number 12, how do you get paid? The answer here you're looking for is only by the client. You know, they're fee only. They're not fee-based. So fee-based, they're getting, you know, some type of commission, referral fees, something besides just getting paid by the client. Number 13, what are my all-in costs? Here you want them to not only tell you what you're paying for them for your service, but also, you know, the fees are within the investments they're recommending as well, you know, i.e. expense ratios. You know, or are they charging in commissions again? You know, getting at, are they fee-only versus fee-based? Now let's get to a critical aspect. How are they paid, Mike? And different advisors, you know, have different fee structures, and understand how each advisor is compensated is essential here.
Yeah, sure thing. So we're going to explore fee-only advisors, commission-based models, and in a hybrid approach. And so, again, it's crucial to know how your advisor makes money. It's crucial for transparency. And so you need to know where their allegiance lies. Is it with you, the client, or is it with their firm? And so three ways that advisors and planners are going to get paid. They're going to receive a commission only. And so this means that they're solely compensated just by the financial transactions. You know, for example, accounts they open, or, you know, maybe it's products they sell. A lot of times an annuity or a life insurance policy pays a commission. The client pays nothing to the advisor or planner. They make their money off of the commission from the companies of the products they sell. The next way is a fee-based plus commission. And so what happens here is they usually charge some sort of a flat rate, and then they receive the commissions as well. So the client may pay a fee, but the advisor also receives some sort of commissions from selling, again, the products of the brokerage firm or the mutual fund company or insurance company or whatever. And then lastly, fee only. And what this is the advisor is only paid by the client. So there's really a fee only does a really good job of working toward removing the conflict of interest, because they're not incentivized to sell somebody a product they may or may not need to make a commission. So just keep this in mind too, is the worst financial products, they pay the best commissions. I'm going to say that again because it's so important. The worst financial products pay the best commissions. So the advisor, you know, even if they were a competent advisor, they're facing a horrible or terrible conflict of interest when these are products that their firm sells, you know. And however, most of these advisors have had little or no training on financial planning or comprehensive financial planning. Their training lies in sales. Their job, you know, that the company has hired them to do is sell you something. And so it may or may not be the right place to go. And so, you know, as you're asking these questions to your advisor, an example might be, you know, how much do I pay you, you know, as an interview question when you're interviewing one, they tell you that you don't pay anything. Well, when you hear this, that should ring a bell in your head that they make their money from commissions on products that they sell to you. So that may or may not be in your best interest. And so you want to be able to keep that in mind. And so what are the ways that you should pay? If you decide you need an advisor, how should you pay your advisor? And we'll talk about that here. And so in both Casey and my opinion, these are the only ways that if you choose to have a financial planner or advisor, how they should get paid. And so those four ways are hourly, is the first one. You know, they pay a set, you know, you pay a set fee per hour on that. The next way would be a project. You know, maybe you have a specific set of tasks that you need to get done and you don't know how to do that. And so, you know, maybe you're going through an estate closure for your parents or something of that nature, and you just want to, or maybe you left a job and you need help moving a 401k to either an IRA or something. So you just have a specified set of objectives that you want to get done. You know, it'd probably be a short-term, you know, engagement with that advisor. So it'd be a project. And so you go to an advisor and you tell them, I want to do X. And they say, well, to do that would cost you, you know, this much money. And so, and then after those tasks get done, the relationship would typically end. The next way is what we call AUM, and that stands for assets under management. And what that is that typically, you see this when you go to maybe a firm that does only investment management, or maybe they do investment management and planning, but in some manner they're gonna manage your investments. So, and what that is they charge a percentage annually of the money that they're managing, you know, and so it's an arrangement where, you know, the client would, they want the ongoing support, you know, of the managing and the investments. And so that fee is typically, like I said, you know, a percentage. And the most common fee that we see out there is about 1%. And that changes a little bit, but that's just kind of the most common fee. And that's been that way for decades. And so, this type of arrangement is really a long-term relationship with the client. And so with AUM, the client, you know, they might be paying for just the investment management, or it may have financial planning tied in with that management as well. And then really the fourth way to pay is what we call flat fee. And so this can be, you know, investment management plus planning, or maybe it's just advice only. And so just like it sounds, the client pays the advisor a flat fee, you know, just a set amount for the services they're providing, you know. And this is our favored method, and this is what we use in our financial planning company. And we like this because, you know, with the AUM, it's good and it serves the needs, but advisors are incentivized to bring on clients that have a higher amount of investments that they're going to be managing, because it's more for them. And so while flat fee kind of removes as much as possible, you know, the conflict of interest. So in the common example I like to give in this is, you know, if a client receives $100,000 and they have some high interest debt that they could pay off with that money, or they could invest that money in the market, you know, under the AUM, the advisor might be incentivized to convince the client that it would make more sense to invest it than pay off the debt. So when you go to flat fee, you really eliminate as much as possible the conflicts of interest.
Absolutely. And now off those models, we're going to get into, you know, specifically some potential conflicts of interest. So first with the AUM model, the percentage model, as Mike alluded to, they may potentially not recommend paying down debt. Maybe they're not advising, maybe they're advising you to do a 401k rollover when maybe it's not in your best interest. And these aren't saying that may be in your best interest, but you just want to be aware of potential conflicts of interest there. Maybe they're recommending a lower withdrawal rate than you can withstand. Maybe they're requiring a high minimum to invest. So for example, maybe they require $750,000 or $1 million or more. So, you know, the working people in their 20s, 30s, and maybe even 40s or more, it's hard for them to work with an advisor under this model. And then lastly here, the rates charged, you know, they may come down slowly and a rate's changed, but are they explained clearly? Is it a tiered or a flat fee? And do you understand it? Do you understand how you're being charged? Hourly, advisors, what are some conflicts of interest here? Advisors may work slower, if you will, or require more visits than needed to complete the project. May be a conflict of interest. You, the client, are less likely to ask questions or seek them out if you're paying by the hour. So maybe you should consider a different option if that's the case for you. And lastly, the annual retainer or flat fee model. Maybe some advisors, they are not spending as much time on you since they're getting paid the same amount. Again, good advisors in those realms, these conflicts of interest are going to be less likely, but things that you should be aware of no matter what model, as So as you can see, there's conflicts of interest no matter which one you go to. This doesn't mean that you should avoid all financial advisors, again, because the good ones are worth their weight in gold, but you want to make sure that you're aware of them. And kind of finally, as we wrap things up by discussing the benefits of working with a planner, it's not just about making more money here. So Mike, what are some benefits?
Yeah, and we're going to touch on, you know, what are those holistic advantages, you know, and those may include having peace of mind, gaining clarity around the goals that you have in your life. And, you know, another big thing is navigating life's transitions, you know, whether it's you're just about to get married and integrate, you know, two people's financial situations together, or you're moving into retirement, or maybe it's the loss of a spouse, or, you know, there's many, many life transitions that a good financial planner will help you to navigate through. And it's more than what we initially think of as meeting the eye when we think about a planner. And so, you know, when you're working with a planner, you know, those benefits, you know, can include, again, that holistic financial planning. They're going to look at your whole situation comprehensively. They consider various aspects, you know, the budgeting, the investments, retirement planning, tax planning, estate planning, risk management, all that. We mentioned that earlier, you know, and that holistic approach ensures that all areas of your financial life are addressed. Goal clarity, you know, a financial planner helps you, you know, first define and then prioritize those financial goals, because that's really what should drive your entire plan is your goals. And, you know, in our firm, we spend a lot of time up front working on our goals with clients. And that's what your, you know, a planner should do for you. They work with you to, you know, create a tailored plan that's aligned to your aspirations and your values, you know, and it's not just saying, okay, you're 35, you should be having this. No, they're going to look at every, you know, look at you individually and set up a unique plan, you know, and they set those clear goals. They help you set those clear goals and help you stay focused as time goes on and make informed decisions, to really achieve those goals and strive towards reaching those goals. Their expertise and knowledge, you know, there's a huge benefit of working with a planner because of what they know. You know, they're trained professionals in this field and they have expertise and they stay updated on trends and laws and strategies and regulations. And their knowledge can help you to navigate through, you know, very complex financial, you know, situations and help you make informed choices. And these could be, you know, has the tax law changed? You know, can I do something different to benefit me from a tax perspective? Or, you know, what are the limits revolving around contributions and on and on and on? You know, the next thing too is they help provide an objective viewpoint. So when we deal with money, money gets emotional. I mean, we are very, as you know, a people very emotional about money, and they take that emotion out, you know, and those biases that maybe often lead to a bad judgment. A planner will help you alleviate those, and they should bring those to your attention. You know, again, they provide that objective viewpoint and they help you make rational choices based on your unique situation and what they have determined that your goals are, you know, and they offer guidance, you know, especially like when the market hits a downturn, right? You know, we talk about what happens when the markets go down because markets are going to go down. It's just a fact. But when, you know, we see we lose money, we become emotional and, you know, that's tough. And a good advisor will walk you through that and explain to you, you know, logically why it makes sense to do, you know, a particular decision. And then again, you know, through that life transitions, right? You know, we go through the loss of a spouse and, you know, maybe we're charitably inclined and we want to give away a bunch of money and it may or may not make sense. And those just different things where emotions can be brought up, they help to just kind of keep you on the level, right? And so finally, peace of mind is a big one. So when working with a planner, you know, they can provide you with peace of mind. And that's knowing that you have a well thought out plan and it's in place and somebody's keeping an eye on it. And so that helps to alleviate stress and anxiety and other, you know, other negative emotions that maybe working with money may cause you to exhibit. And so remember the benefits, you know, is you know, when you're trying to decide whether to work with a financial planner, you know, they're going to vary depending on your specific needs and circumstances, but it's essential to find a planner who really, again, focuses on your goals and your values first and then builds the plan around that. And that's where they provide the expertise that you should have.
And the last thing we have for this episode is going to be talking about common myths and mistakes. So, you know, going on with myths here, they're not only for the rich of working with a planner. You know, as we kind of talked about early, financial planning can be for everyone and should be for everyone, regardless of income, regardless if you're doing it by yourself. Everyone should have a financial plan. You know, a financial planner can help individuals at any stage in their journey, whether they're just starting out, they're planning for retirement, or they're in retirement. You know, it's about setting those goals and creating that roadmap and then reviewing that as time goes on. You know, another mistake is assuming that financial planners only focus on investments. While investment management is certainly a key part of the services, financial planners cover a lot more, you know, cash flow budgeting, retirement planning, tax planning, estate planning, and much more that we talked about. You know, they're taking a comprehensive approach. Another myth, financial planners can predict the market. No, if anybody tells you can, run the other way. Financial planners and no one can predict the market with any kind of certainty. You know, their role is to help you create a plan that aligns with your goals and risk tolerance rather than trying to time the market. Financial planners are just salespeople. Yeah, while there are some financial planners who prioritize, as we talked about, those are more advisors who are selling financial products and have training in sales versus training in true financial planning. Reputable planners adhere to those fiduciary standards that are going to act in those clients' best interests. Some mistakes that are out there, you know, not clarifying your financial goals, because again, without clear goals, it's going to be challenging or virtually impossible for a financial planner to create a well-tailored plan that meets your needs, you know, whether it's short-term or long-term objectives. Number two, you're not asking about fees and compensation is a huge mistake. It's crucial to understand how your financial planner is being compensated, you know, whether they're charging a flat fee, an hourly rate, percentage of assets under management. You want to know exactly, and you want to be able to understand it. It needs to be transparent so any surprises are avoided later on. And you want to know about the investments too that you're in and what those fees are. Number three, not reviewing the financial plan regularly. You know, your situation, your life evolves. It changes, usually every year. You know, if we really look and reflect on it, it changes. So it's essential to review your plan at least once a year with your planner. Number four, relying solely on the financial planner. Yeah, while financial planners do provide that expertise, it's essential for you to stay engaged in your financial matters as well. It's your financial life. You're not just handing everything over. They're helping guide you and provide their expertise and knowledge and objective viewpoint. But it's important for you to take the time to understand their recommendations and ask questions when needed. Number five, a mistake is not vetting the planner's credentials. You know, we talked about different ways to do that, you know, whether they have a CFP or a different credential and you know, what regulatory bodies, and we're going to put those in the show notes. Remember that finding the right financial planner involves research, you know, pre-interview, during the interview, you know, do your due diligence and clearly communicate about your expectations and your financial situation in hopes that you will find a long-term financial planner to fit your needs.
Oh man, all good stuff. So as we conclude, you know, finding and working with a financial planner, it can provide you with valuable guidance and support in managing your personal finances, you know, and that will help you achieve your goals and provide peace of mind to you, as we've kind of all talked about. And so really, by carefully considering your needs, conducting that thorough research that we've talked about through here, and asking the right questions, you're going to be able to find, you know, a trusted advisor or planner who aligns with you, with your values, and helps you to navigate, you know, those complexities in financial planning. So as we wrap up, and we want to give our listeners a key action item in every episode. And so, you know, the action item for this episode is, if you currently have a financial planner, you know, we encourage you to ask those questions if you may have maybe never done that, if you haven't already done so. And then if you are considering, you know, a planner, you know, consider one that, and make sure to do the proper pre-interview research and go in and ask those questions that we've talked about, you know, during the interview, and interview multiple, you know, planners, and ultimately, you know, make sure to find one that that you can trust and that you can open up to and feel comfortable with. And so that would be our key action item for today. Thank you very much for listening in today, and we look forward to our next episode.
Lastly, for the disclaimer, this podcast is for educational purposes only. As anything you'd find online, we only give advice to people we know their personal situation. Without knowing yours, it'd be foolish to provide advice. For advice, consult the experts you may have in your life, your accountant, your attorney, your financial advisor, essentially the people who know you and your situation personally.